Okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
I know your time.
Let's do a little prayer before.
Yeah,
we always love to bring it to prayer. Lord, thank you so much for what you've done in Bear's life. Lord, thank you so much for what you're doing through Bear's life, through the new book launch. And Lord, thank you for what you've done even on our own platform. Yeah. And Jesus, we just pray that as we begin to speak of you and begin to talk of you, Lord, you'll just begin to impact people through the screens, through the interview. People will begin to have revelations of who you are that you want to reveal, God. And we just pray for your kingdom to come through this podcast, God. In the name of Jesus, amen. All right. Well, hello and welcome back to the Way UK podcast. Hey. My name is Jesse, joined by the wonderful Michelle, co-host.
Hey, guys.
And today we have a very special guest with us, the wonderful Bear Grylls. Welcome in, Bear Grylls.
Nice to be with you guys, yeah.
Bear, why don't you give us a little introduction? I feel like you know yourself the best. who are you? What are you up to?
Oh, I don't know. I struggle with that. I think we have the kind of like the public work side of all of our lives, don't we? Which is kind of the headlines of things. And often the truth is the sort of behind the scenes stuff. And I always feel, to be honest, a more honest introduction would be like, I'm Bear Grylls. I struggle often. I'm definitely not as strong and you know, whatever, as the TV shows suddenly sometimes make out. But I know the value of the beautiful things in my life, and those are always rooted in great friends, good community, honest relationships. Faith has been a driving part of that all my life. And then just for me, adventure has been a kind of a compass as well, you know, loving the outdoors. And I've been privileged to have many, many great adventures in my life. Long may they continue. I feel adventure is a state of mind. It's how we live our lives. It's the everyday. Approaching it with that kind of never give up spirit and trying to be kind and brave along the way. So that would probably be a more honest introduction.
Love that.
Rambling, but yeah.
Nah, and there's loads to you. And the fact that that's what you want to introduce as well just shows a little bit of who you are character-wise. You've done amazing things, and yet how you introduce yourself is as a person who is friends and a father. And like, that's
well,
beautiful.
I think that's the real stuff in our life. I think life humbles everybody eventually, and it's like, I really do feel the real wealth in my life is always rooted in our connections with each other and the quality of our friendships and, you know, knowing the source to plug into for our heart, for the good times and the bad times. And, you know, the things of work, like awards or summits reached, and, you know, we were talking about Everest before filming and all of those sort of things, they're kind of like, they're markers in our life, but they're not our life. They're not our identity. And I learned long ago, don't have those things as my identity, because they come and go, and they're tins and pots, as they say, and pots. And I think as a dad as well, you realize that more and more, the kind of, you know, that the power of family and trying to sort of remind myself as much as our kids that, you know, the real stuff is never stuff. It's a journey. But I'm speaking a language you guys understand, and it's rare because I spend a lot of time as well sort of having to do press stuff for TV shows or whatever, and it's always about championing the kind of successes and stuff and the work things.
Yeah.
But actually they're always less interesting
than
talking about this sort of thing, which is about people and faith.
Totally.
And it's an element of your life that most people know if they talk to you, but might not know if they watch you on TV, the fact that you have a faith, the fact that you are connected to the source, that your identity's above, not in what you do. And I guess I'd love to hear the story of faith as a teenage Bear. I can only imagine what he was like.
Teenage Bear, the struggle, many doubts. And to be honest, it's they're still there today. You know, many struggles in terms of faith and many doubts still. But I've learned not to be scared of those or shy away from those. Mm. You know, doubt and faith, two sides of the same coin.
Mm.
You know, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. But I think in terms of where did my faith come from originally, I had a really natural faith as a kid.
Mm.
As a little kid, it's like I knew.
Wow.
I knew. It's like we're loved, it's light, is rooted in fun and freedom and connection and like the outdoors.
Oh, wow.
And I wouldn't articulate it even like that. It's just like there.
Yeah.
Then I went to school.
Oh.
And, you know, school can be challenging for people. And it's funny now as a dad, and our youngest is, you know, going through exams as we speak. And it's like when you're in that space and you're, it's all so consuming, isn't it? And scary. And then with a bit of space, you look at it and you go, it's okay. It's like it's a period of your life.
Yeah. Mm.
But I went to school and suddenly we had to go to church every day. Chapel. half of it was in Latin.
Well,
most of the time they were dressed in big white dresses.
Yeah.
I got really confused. I kind of thought, oh, I've really got faith wrong.
Mm.
Mm.
This is faith.
Mm.
And I really struggled. I really kind of thought it was childish stuff before. Mm. This is what faith is, and I let it go. And tried to do life on my own and felt a lot less certain, a lot less secure. Kind of hungered after how it was, but thought it's not like that. I've got to let it go. I've got to, you know, deal with this.
Yeah.
But felt unsure, always felt unsure. And then I was about 15, and my godfather, who was like a second dad to me, he'd been like my dad's best friend, lived with us a bunch of the time. He was like, it was a real part of my life, always growing up. It was super close. And out of the blue, young, he died. And I remember being told this at school in a matter of fact way. Oh, and by the way, Grills, your godfather's died, and that's that. And I just remember like just like the guts being ripped out, you know. And I remember going outside and going to walking down the end of the kind of the school grounds and sitting in a tree. And I don't know, trees had always been a big part of my life. Still are. Love them. Never pass a tree without at least touching it now. I'm like, okay. Wow. Yeah, I'm a real tree hugger, always have been, and a climber. But as a kid, I was always up trees. And I remember climbing this tree, and teenagers, the teenage bear didn't really cry. You know, it was like I was learning defense mechanisms more than crying. And I just remember like crying my eyes out in this tree and just saying, I wish you were real. I wish, like, I knew you. I wish that was real. Because I really, really need you right now. Mm. Amen. I don't think it even had an amen. I mean, it's, you know, little did I know, really, that is it's a prayer of salvation.
Yeah.
But it's rough, and it wasn't formal. And I don't know, I always loved the story of the thief on the cross next to Jesus. And he never said any prayer of salvation and did any ritual of, you know, baptism or anything.
Yeah.
He just shouted out at Jesus in his pain and torture, about to die of suffocation and horror. He just said, Jesus, don't forget me. Please don't forget me. And that is it. And we have our prayers in different ways. But that was mine, is saying, please be with me. And nothing really dramatic happened. But from little acorns, great oaks, trees grow and little things started to happen. And people were brought into my life, and it felt like that fire was like, boom, the pilot light was on. And then it started to grow, and I know it's been there. You know, it's gone up and down in my life. Like I say, it's not always a roaring fire. Sometimes it's more of an ember. But it's like never left me, and it's been a lifetime journey to understand that faith is about that fire inside, that streak of steel in our hearts. It's about friendships of connection. It's about being plugged into the Almighty. It's not about having to go to church or say anything in a formal way. It's quiet. It's going to have struggles and doubts.
Yeah.
But the light never leaves us. And that has been That has been with me ever since, and it's so been good. The greatest quiet thing in my life.
Oh, wow. I think like that is just the story of like all of our sort of walks with Jesus, right? We often think that life's just going to be this perfect thing now that I'm following Jesus. It's going to be so easy now, but it's just like, it's not like that at all. It's the ups and the downs, it's the peaks and the troughs. And
yeah. And
it's just that, like you said, it's like an ember sometimes. It's just like there's not this huge fire sometimes. Yeah. Like we'd hope it would be. But
that's relationships, isn't it? I mean, you know, that's why it's beautiful as well.
Mm.
You know, and we go up and down. But luckily, it's not about us. That's been the other big revelation in my life. It's not about everything else in our life tells us you've got to be something. Mm. Strong, this, dependable. What, you know, it's like, this is like wherever you are.
Mm.
It's like those arms are around you.
So good.
And that's like... that's a gift, and it's really hard to get one's head around.
Mm.
But it's the beating heart of it.
Yeah. What was that like? When was the point where you sort of recognized that, okay, God, I'm going to give you my yes, I'm going to be all in into this? Like you said, you sort of cried out in the trees, like sort of grieving as a young boy. I'm just asking God, like, if you're real, then just make yourself so real to me. But what was that point like? Like, was there a moment where you can, like, look back on and really say, okay, this was a moment where I was able to just say, okay, God, I'm going to give you my yes. Like the point that you became a Christian, would you say?
Well, that happened in that tree, you know, it's the truth. And you know, like I say, people brought into my life and helped me and guided me and supported. And it like sort of, it steadily grew, and it was, you know, it was simple and, like I say, not very religious as such, but the light is on. But I do. I think the sort of the leaving school was kind of hard because you sort of, you're like, shit, what's going to be ahead? And I remember making a decision when I was about 19 to try for the SAS. And I was young. I was one of the youngest to try it at that stage. And everyone else were going off to university.
Yeah.
And I knew in my heart I wanted to do the path less trodden.
Mm.
I wanted, everyone else was doing the conventional. I wanted to try and join as a regular, so as a private, you know, bottom of the pile.
Yeah.
Try and join the reserve SAS, 21 SAS, and try and do the selection process.
Wow.
And being really daunted and knowing I will probably fail. You know, 120 of us lined up on day one,
and
they said four of you will be here at the end. All of them were like muscled, ripped. I thought, what am I doing? You know, I'm like way out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I really remember the kind of that. The faith really fired up before then. It was like, it was a real realization, I cannot do this one alone.
Mm.
I'm not going to make it, you know. And actually, ironically, after about 4 months of selection the first time, I failed. And I was just like, wasn't good enough, wasn't fast enough, wasn't fit enough.
Yeah.
And I remember being gutted because I sacrificed, I dropped out of uni and I was all in. And then suddenly I was like, you know, I'd failed this thing, and I was like, but I knew that God was in this somehow as well, you know. And one of my best friends, who's still a best friend to this day, and he's often said this to me at key things in life, he says, God's callings always have a birth, a death, and a resurrection.
Yeah.
And I love that, and it's been so true in so many things in my life. So often we've gone for it on a big, you know, so maybe it's a big expedition or a big TV show or a big, you know, whatever. And it's kind of like, and it launches, and then it dies, and it's like now you've got nothing else to depend on.
Yeah,
maybe it's that. Maybe that's the point. Mm. But he said that to me at that point, and I remember just like lying on the floor in my room, listening to Meatloaf on full volume, knowing like we've got this. We're gonna go back, and I'm gonna be helped and empowered and strengthened, and you know, and passed it second time round, and it. It was such a door opener for my life, really, because on the back of that, suddenly we were on this road that none of my kind of peers were on. It was like, this was our path. And it was, I joined something extraordinary, friends to this day, skills and things to this day. And it sort of has been such a sort of bedrock then of what eventually became my work career. But I think if you'd asked me that time of the fire, that was probably when I felt it.
Oh, wow.
And the other cool final little thing on
this, because
I did it with my best buddy.
Oh.
And he's got a beautiful faith as well.
Wow.
And when we were stood at the start, 120, And they clocked pretty early we were friends.
Yeah.
And they said, I wouldn't depend on this friendship because if they're 120 here and they're four at the end, the likelihood of your best buddy being one of the four or you being one of the four is very low.
Whoa.
So you want to sever, just, you know, focus on what you got to do. And it was like, I can't do that. He's like, I really need him, you know. Mm. And actually, he failed first time around, got it second time. We were both in that four. He's a best brother to this day. But his faith kept me going in so many moments. And there's one final march on selection. Mm. And they call it, you're like 50 kilometers in. In fact, more like 60 kilometers in to this final march across the mountains through the day and the night, carrying huge weights, deep snow. You've been going for weeks already at this stage. You're broken.
Yeah.
And the last peak, they always call it VW Valley, Voluntary Withdrawal Valley. And it's where most, you know, that's where it's a heartbreaker.
Mm.
It's where people ultimately often quit.
Mm.
And I'd never forget going out with him 3 a.m, driving, wind and rain and in the snow, and it was like gopping.
Mm.
Feet bleeding, you know, like really. And I was like, I'm not sure. I'm like, oh, I'm pretty close.
Oof.
My fire was pretty dim.
Yeah.
And I remember being beside Trucker and just hearing him quoting Bible verses to himself under his breath. He was going, those that hope on the Lord will rise on wings like eagles. They will run and they will not grow faint.
Yes.
And it was like, I was like, wow. Wow, I am holding on to your shirt tails, brother. You know, and I did. And I held on to his shirt and we kind of, you know, we got through that together. But he was a beautiful inspiration and still is this day in terms of faith in the difficult moments.
Isn't that so good, though? Like, it just goes to show that when you put your hope in something different out of this earth, it sustains you and it's something way stronger. And I love when you said like the life, the death and the resurrection. We often think like with our dreams, if we like give it to God and it just doesn't become anything, we think it's gone, but we don't realize that it's so much better when God resurrects it.
Yeah,
like in his time.
Yeah.
And you also just mentioning your friend Trucker, like it's also the whole thing about like community, how much we need people around us to
together stronger.
Yeah.
I mean, it's simple stuff, but it's like so much of, I think as a society, people, we build our hopes on ourselves so often we can't help ourselves on our degree or on our qualifications or on our somebody's, you know, sporting skills or good looks or whatever these things are. And it's like, I've just learned in life, they're all sand, you know, and I don't want to build it on that any longer.
So
you know, it's like, there's one sure thing to build it on, and win or lose. You know, sometimes we'll lose and it's okay, and we'll fail and it's okay. Sometimes we'll have a birth and a death and there won't be a resurrection of that dream. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we have something more assured under us, and it's like eyes on the long-term prize is such a great way to live, and it helps you be free and it helps you live lightly. And then you stop caring so much about the wins or the losses.
So
it's a process and the connections along the way. And that's a kind of good way to live, isn't it?
It's a beautiful way. And I love that we get to see like the fruit of the past 20, 30 years of going on a process with God in your life. We get to hear insights of how God's met you and kind of realigned your thinking and heart to be more in tune with his. And again, that story, just how God didn't quite bring a resurrection until he had a friend with you, and then it's
true.
Community that's so important.
Yeah, actually never really told that story before. It's nice. It's, and you're right, it's like, I love that man.
It's so cool, isn't it? And I guess, you know, we're seeing the final product and you're like, oh, you introduced yourself as a man who has struggles, has doubts, is in a process and has been in a process. I guess, have you got any stories or maybe, and you can bring what you want, but maybe a moment where you might have felt like you've failed or gone too far in the other direction, where you feel like, I need to be an individual person and chase after my career or do this. And actually God's brought you back to the cross and God's brought you back to who he is.
Well, there'll be many of those times. I think having a beautiful sort of grounded family has been key in the journey. You know, I married Shara when we were young. You know, we were just 25, both of us lost our fathers in our first year of marriage, and it really kind of like really brought us together, rocked our world a lot, because suddenly we were like really on our own and like dealing with two mothers as well who were sort of in the, they were a mess at this stage. And it's like, you know, we had to kind of grow up fast while everyone was still kind of having a good time. But, and I think that really brought us together. But, you know, I look back on the journey and it's been, you know, so many ups and downs and so many failures as well along the way. You know, I think it's sort of, sometimes we see people on TV and you see the wins, you know, but you forget the number of failures behind it as well. I've had so many failures, you have no idea. And I don't know, whenever we've had kind of work wins and it's sort of, you know, I don't know whether it's like we've had Emmys or things like that, or summits or kind of the, whatever the trophies and triumphs along the way, she's always kind of very like, yeah, but, you know, kids need putting to bed, you know. It's like, I know she's always been a great grounding influence. And and I do think this thing of failures is so important to remind people, you know, remind myself as well, remind my our family. You know, I think our boys have grown up always seeing the good stuff, seeing the wins and the fruits of kind of, you know, any work things. But actually, I said to them the other day, you have no idea how many TV shows we've had that have failed. I actually wrote it out for them, and it was like something like 35 different separate shows, not episodes, like separate shows.
Dang.
That of which probably six have worked over the years, you know, and the others have just been either canned after an episode or maybe a season. And it's like they've never even heard of these shows. And I go, yeah, but you know what? Never have got to that one without those six disasters. Cool. Never got so to that one without those four disasters. You know, and it's like all those times we fail, it's okay. You know, it's they're stepping stones to the good stuff. And again, so to hold the wins and the losses lightly. So I don't know. All these things are going to help along the way, I think.
I find failure funny at the moment, particularly because with social media, cancel culture, it's, failure now feels like the end of the story rather than the beginning. And it actually stops people from stepping out and doing what they feel God's calling them to do. Stops them from trying this the series that doesn't actually land but gets you to the next one, which flies.
Well, it's scary. That's the thing. You know, we're scared of failure because it makes us look vulnerable, and to our peers it looks like a loss. But actually, you know, the one thing failure isn't is the end. You know, that's the irony. You know, it's actually, as you say, it's actually the beginning. So you know, now you're on the journey. You might have to go through three or four more of those, you know, maybe more until you get to the good stuff. But congratulations, you're on the way. that's how I see it. It's how I've always tried to say it to our boys. Don't apologize for failing. Maybe for not trying. Or not doing your best, but like not for failing. You know, super proud of those. Wear them like scars. You know,
that's so good.
Yeah, one thing that I've wanted to ask when I was thinking, okay, I've got Bear Grylls on the couch coming in a few weeks. what should I ask him? And I was thinking about this Jonathan Helser quote, and he talks about the psalm where it says, "He leads me beside still waters," and he kind of applies it to his life as I find places where I encounter God. I go find a still water where I can encounter God. What's some of the most unique, weird places that you've encountered God? Like, have you got a story of meeting God in the jungle or meeting God in...
Well, I've had a lot of encounters with the good Lord in the jungle. And there've been a lot of mountains and a lot of deserts. And, you know, I mean, I think obviously things like the summit of Everest was a special one. You know, we had four people lose their lives up there. It was like a pretty kind of it was a sort of rough few months on that mountain, but at the same time a sort of an incredible magic on the top, and it's the icy roof of the world and you see the curvature of the earth. And I don't know, that had been a dream since I started climbing with my dad at a young age, so that was special. But so many sort of unglamorous moments as well. And I don't know, even our place, when Shara and me first got married, we were about to buy a one-bedroom flat in London that we couldn't afford, and we didn't buy it in the end. We bought a houseboat, and we bought this little island off the coast of Wales, and we spent less on the boat and the island than we did on the one-bedroom flat we were about to buy here.
Seriously?
And I always thought that was kind of cool. This is going to be an adventure. It might not work out, but it's going to be it's going to be fun. And I think of that place up there in North Wales. It's been such a beautiful part of our family's life for all of our kids growing up there.
Yeah.
And we have a little cave there, And I have written above it that exact quote. It said, "My soul he does restore again."
Oh, wow.
And nature does that. Nature is always going to be our best healer.
It's much better than a room that...
Let's give it a second.
...suddenly has aircon noise appear and make noise. If you're wondering what that was, it's not the first time we've had to pause for a second and have the aircon
switch on.
You may have noticed that noise if you're still listening in. That's the aircon. So we're going to pause for 2 minutes and we'll be right back. So, Bear, as we were speaking, as the aircon was on, I told it's a secret that I was going to hold on to, that I have read some of your books before. Claw of the Crocodile. Sweet.
Thank you.
Liar of the Leopard. Rage of the Rhino. Yeah. I related to Rage of the Rhino.
Yeah.
Because I once saw a rhino when I was 10 years old in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I saw it and it was looking at me and I was on my own. It was like 6 a.m. and I ran into my room screaming, crying.
Well, I'm not surprised. You don't want to be on your own. You know, that's scary.
Yeah. I had a little penknife, though, a Swiss penknife, just in case.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have been worried if you that, you know. Well, you live to tell the tale.
I live to tell the tale.
Another good adventure in your life. Good for you. But I'm very touchy. Thank you for reading some of those. Yeah.
No, it inspired me. I think I climbed a tree and fell off and never got back on, but it inspired me to do it anyway. you've got a new book coming out, and it's about Jesus, which is super cool. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it yourself, a bit of why you've written it, maybe what you're hoping it'll do when people read it?
Well, this has been the toughest, most difficult thing I've ever done, but it's also the best thing I've ever done.
Mm.
It's called The Greatest Story Ever Told, and that is it. It's a real story of Jesus told as a thriller, as a murder mystery. I mean, a pastor in the States read it this week and sent me a note today going, "I didn't know what to expect. I thought it'd be like a survival adventure book. And you've written Jesus' story." I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Do you know what it's like?" He goes, "First of all, it blew me away. And I haven't cried so much in a long time." And I go, "That's special." But then he goes, "It's like somebody's asked John Grisham to write the story of Christ." And I thought, that's it. It's a good summary because it's like, you know, you got the accounts of Jesus in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you know, but I take them, put them all together in a linear story and tell it as a short, super punchy thriller. But I don't change a single word that Jesus says. So you kind of have it in, you have things like The Chosen that, you know, your listeners might have loved, and that's been a phenomenon. But ultimately, they're making up dialogue for Jesus as they go along, you know, and that has a great place in the world, and it points people towards Christ amazingly. But I wanted to say, I didn't want to make up a single word, you know, so I use different versions, different translations, and dramatize the things around it. But factually, it's all absolutely accurate. I had a team of like 15 incredible theologians from all over the world help me with this. So that's why it's been hard, because it's like, it's got to be absolutely right. This is his story.
Yeah.
This is history. His story is the greatest story. I don't want to, I can't mess this up. And like you're so sweet saying about other books I've done, and I'm proud of those other books. We've done many books, but I would give them all up in a heartbeat for this. Wow. It's the only one I really want. My goal is that every person on the planet reads this. Mm. It's the story of Jesus told afresh for a new generation in a way that's never been done before.
Mm.
And if you think there have been millions and millions and millions of books written about the Christian faith over the years, and yet nobody's ever done this. They've never just told the story of Jesus from start to finish, but without changing a word of his.
Mm.
And I woke up one morning and I was like, this is what I was going to do. I knew it. And that's why it's been, this year has been so life-changing, and I've never had a year like this.
Wow.
You know, I wrote it in the jungle with Jesse, my elder son.
Oh.
And we were there filming for a month in this little cabin and filming all day. And I'd come back at 11 o'clock in the evening. I'm still writing. And he'd go, "I've got to go to bed." And then he'd wake up at 4 in the morning and I'm still writing. He's going, "Are you on drugs? What's going on?" And it's like, I don't know. It's just like, I'm.
It was like that
for a month.
Wow,
look, the building has come to life again.
Yeah. See, this is why it's better to record a podcast in the rainforest. So,
well, I did a podcast the other day and I did it in like I'd do it in our sauna with the heat off. It looks like a cabin. It looked great. I think it's halfway through. Jesse, our eldest son, fires up the sauna without me knowing. And I'm like 20 minutes in, I'm thinking, oh, wow, it's getting pretty hot. So I ended up doing the rest of the podcast outside in the rain, holding my laptop. And it was great. So we can make it work.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about the weirdest places that we've talked about God. I'm not quite sure this fits the, you know, fits Everest standards, but it does, does certainly.
It's dying down. We're getting
it. It's dying down.
Well, you sort of said how like it was one of the hardest things for you writing this book. I was just wondering, like, what made it so hard, and what was moment where, like, it's a heart hitting moment where you just really encountered God whilst you were writing it.
I think I just felt this weight of like, don't screw this up. This is not you writing about, you know, some survival stuff. This is, you're telling the greatest story ever told. This is like somebody's going to be their first and only ever exposure to the story of Jesus, you know, and for you and me, you know, if you have a faith, you can read the Gospels, and the kind of beauty is actually they're very straight and simple and undramatic. And it's like Jesus was taken to the place of Golgotha and crucified. Boom, that's it. Mm. And it's kind of like for you and me, it's like that's honey. It's like it goes in our hearts and it's, you know, but it could be quite dry if you've never encountered it before. And, you know, so I'm writing it like as it would happen, writing the Roman soldier knelt hard on Jesus's hand, grabbed an iron bolt from his bucket and drove it through his hand, a spit burst out of Jesus's mouth. It's like, you know, I'm dramatizing the story, but it's accurate and factual. And I kind of just didn't want to screw it up. And it's like so much of it is so nuanced. I mean, I was reading... Yeah. You know, I end up reading like 300-page books on just the encounter of like Jesus with Peter after the resurrection, when he sees him from the fishing boat and jumps in, wades ashore, desperate to get to him. You know, it's like that encounter is so, there's so much going on there. And yet you've got to get all that nuance. And I haven't got 300 pages. I've got a paragraph about this because this book is punchy and short and fast, but it's like, don't throw it away. And it's like, every encounter, every story, it's like I was reading books of 100-page books on like him with the lady, the Samaritan lady, the first person in his life that he reveals his divinity to. You know, he's age 30, he starts to sing, and it's the first person of 30 years that he says for the first time who he really is. I am the Son of God. The first person he reveals is this outcast Samaritan prostitute, you know, and it's like, you know, what a moment, you know. It's like there's so much going on there in this encounter of kind of like, and it's like you can't throw these moments away. So it was complex to write, but I had brilliant guiding. Even like a special man was a guy called Dr. Andrew Ollerton, who's an incredible theologian. And, you know, he guided me so much through it and go, hold on. And actually, I think about that. She wasn't a prostitute, but she'd been married 5 times. Like, he was on every like little detail. Hold on. He was actually on his way through to Samaria at this point, and it was before this, the Emmaus bit. And like, you know, just getting all these things right. Yeah. And even where the Gospels kind of vary and differ, like getting the right nuance. So I stand on the shoulders of many brilliant people who've helped me. But like I say, this isn't my book. This is our book. This is what I want people to be able to share with family and friends, and say, if you're going to read one thing about faith, if you ask me one thing about faith, read this. You know, read this. This is what has lit up my life and changed my life. And I see it already happening. I mean, it's not launched until June the 19th it starts, but I'm seeing it already. People are buying, like, I saw an old lady carrying 20 copies out of a thing the other day, and it was like, wow. You know, she goes, I'm getting it for my son and his friends and this person. And it's like, that is how we reach everybody in the world. And we're in it together. I feel we've got one chance to get, for the first time ever, the story of Christ to number one on the bestseller list. And I'm all in. I am all in. Is like, I've got other things to be promoting, TV shows, like everything is backseat to this.
Let's go.
Oh, well, Bear, thank you so much for sharing a bit of your heart around the book. I just love that throughout this interview, you've constantly brought things back to Christ and back to Jesus and just said, yes, maybe I've done this. Maybe people know this about me. but it's all been Jesus. It's all been Jesus. And that's your prayer for the book, and it's now our prayer for the book. Mm. You know, this is an accessible story that can be brought to anywhere. You know, everyone's got Christmas presents that are needed. Everyone's got birthdays. And I know part of our heart as the Way is to reach people with the good news of Jesus.
Yeah.
And this is a great way in which we can do so. So we encourage it as well. If you want to invest in evangelism, buy the book and send it to people. Mm. If you want to just hear the story of Jesus in another way, please do purchase the book, because it seriously can, from what I've heard, change people's lives. Mm. Yeah. And so that's awesome.
I really that means a lot, and that encouragement. And you know, it's funny, I had a message yesterday from a guy who's 75, chairman of one of the biggest companies in the world, and he said, I've always had a faith, but I met him at Sion, gave him a copy, and he said I cried every night reading this. He goes, my wife thinks I'm having like a breakdown. He goes, but I knew these stories, but I've never read it like this. It's like, this guy is incredible. And like the Jesus we often grow up with is like very candy, sort of Christmas, sort of Western, and sort of, don't know, just like, so the real Jesus was wild. Mm. And just like free and always affirming and just like, a warrior as well. Mm. Like there was nothing kind of like mild, and you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, I love that's the Jesus I love, and I know in my heart. And it's like it's been a lifetime to unravel and separate it just from that experience I said of church as a young teenager. Mm. You know, and you guys, your lives are on fire with that same Christ that is empowering and loving and unjudging and connecting to people. And like I say, you know, the book is a vehicle for that, but it's all of our stories. That's what I like about it. It's all of our stories wrapped up in it, from the skeptic to the broken, to the desperate, to the mother, to the, you know, it's all kind of there. And also I want to finish by saying I love what you guys do. You know, I really do. I think it's life is about where do we choose to put our talents and our energy and our heart. And look what you're doing with it. It's a beautiful thing. And like I say, win or lose, you know, who knows? Who knows? Win or lose, that's not the point. But your heart's about bringing people together and sharing a message of love and positivity. And that, never stop doing that. Whatever your medium is, whether it's podcasts or, you know, it might be something much less glamorous than that. But keep going. You're amazing and a great light.
Oh, thank you, Ben. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
And good sharing a bit of your story as well as Jesus' story.
We survived.
Yeah, we did.
We did it.
And guys, thank you for watching the Way UK podcast. Again, make sure to check out the book. Make sure to subscribe. We've got new content every week, and we will see you another time. Bless you guys.